Welcome, and thank you for listening in to this message from Cross and Crown Baptist Church. We hope the following message will be a great blessing and encouragement to you. More messages from the pulpit of Cross and Crown Baptist Church are available weekly from our website at www.crossandcrownbaptist.org. We invite you to open your Bible and your heart for the preaching of God's holy word.
I'm only 28, and I am starting to feel older now. I did find a whole family of gray hairs living up there in my head, so they are multiplying rather quickly, and so I was very disturbed about that the other night, but I did find them. So I know I'm still young. I'm starting to feel old, but I have been in youth ministry a little bit longer now to where I'm starting to feel like I've seen some general trends, and like I had mentioned last week, I had kind of gotten to the point where all of a sudden I realized that it wasn't just the millennial generation that was in the youth groups anymore. There is a whole new generation coming up, and speaking of that generation, all the young kids are supposed to be dismissed to Miss Becky's class now. So before I forget that and keep going on, all the rest of the kids that are in here, you all are welcome to make your way to the back if you just go straight, and then one of the guys will make sure you take a left. And not out the front door, just take a left to the fellowship hall, and make sure you make your way back there with Miss Becky. She's got a lot of, she's got her choir time there with you guys. So, but I realized that also in Generation Z really is the next generation. A lot of those kids that had been around were in this new generation. So it really started us thinking along the path of last week. We kind of talked about briefly, really kind of some philosophy of Matthew chapter 28. Let's turn there. Let's kind of start there as restarting there and resetting the stage just briefly. But Matthew chapter 28, again, a very familiar passage. Matthew chapter 28, verse number 18. Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, "All power is given unto me in heaven and earth." He says, "Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit." It says, "Teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you alway, even unto the end of the world." In Matthew chapter 28, he talks about that we are to be reaching all nations. And if we're to be reaching all nations, the biblical principle is not just all nations, but I made the comment of last week that we're to be reaching all generations. That the great command, help me out, my brain just went, what is it? Great Commission, thank you. I was going to say commandment, but that didn't sound right. That's a different verse. Great Commission is not just a national or ethnic command, but it's a generational mandate. And we went through there and looked through there and just kind of talked about the idea of a term. And I just want to be clear again, as we have mentioned it here. Last week, we talked about the term of cultural contextualization. And this way of this is that we are to be reaching the next generation. And I want to be very clear about that. What I do not mean by that term is that I'm compromising to this culture to reach the culture. That's not what I'm referring to by any means. What I am referring to that is if I do not understand the culture, I cannot reach the culture. Just as if I were to go overseas to a foreign missions and try to reach a different culture in a different country, I need to understand that culture if I want to effectively reach them, because there's some things that in American culture and a Western mindset, I could preach the gospel in that mindset, but they're not going to understand it because I have a different worldview. Same thing with a different country. That also goes for generations. If you didn't realize it, generations of this next generation thinks differently than some of you do. They do. They have a different worldview. And so therefore, if I'm going to reach them with the gospel, I need to understand how they think. And so as we're going through there, we talked about just this phrase here. If we don't work hard to understand our context, we'll fail in our task to effectively communicate the gospel. And folks, it's vital that we understand that. I did just want to be very clear. What I'm not talking about is I'm not talking about bringing in the rock bands to entertain the culture. Okay, that's not what I'm referring to. By the way, as we get into there, you'll find out later that interestingly enough, that type of philosophy of entertaining the culture isn't really working all that well. Okay, something I have discovered in youth ministry. One of my major thoughts of youth ministry is I love having fun. Okay, I'm a goofball. I am a dork, as my wife says sometimes. But I love having fun. You know what? I can't entertain this generation as well as the world can. I just can't. So I'm not even going to try. I will have fun, but I'm going to give them the Word of God because that's what's going to change their lives, okay? And so as we're talking about this generation, hopefully that is, let's go to that one there, okay? And then we'll come back. All my slides came out of order when they went in there. That's all right, okay. Number three here, we looked at here just real quickly, just the different generations as we're going through. And we have there the baby boomer generation. Okay, now generally also speaking of this, those dates, they can give in flux just a little bit. And I know some people were like, I am not a millennial. Don't call me that. Okay, well, maybe you're technically in it, but you're not. Okay, granted, I got it. Sometimes there's some traits of that generation you don't want to hang on to. Believe me, okay? Some of it also, they're like, well, I'm technically in Generation Z, but I don't really feel like it. I feel like I'm in the older generation. It's okay, all right? I got it. Vance, you're still safe. You're right there on the edge there, okay, buddy? So you fall right there on the edge, and there's just the different generations. There's kind of a clear-cut but not clear-cut way of doing it, all right? And so as we're going through, we're going to be talking about Generation Z. Let me do a little bit of review here, just briefly here, of just some of the forces forming Generation Z. I know you're not going to be reading some of this very super well, so I'll go through it. But some of the forces forming Generation Z, to understand them, okay? Technology, okay? We talked about this, that 57% use social media or use a screen for at least 4 hours or more on an average day. That is the world of millennials and Generation Z is technology. It just is, okay? You can hate on it all you want, but that is where it is, okay? 26%, now this one is interesting. 26%, at least of that Generation Z, uses screen or technology for 8 hours or more each day. You say, how do they do that? It's really not all that hard when you think about it. When if you're at work and you're working on a computer, you go home and you've got your TV, you've got your phone, your smartphone. Besides, the only person I know who's got a flip phone anymore is your husband, John, Mary. So I don't know. Anyone else have a flip phone? Anyone else have one? No one has one besides John. He's over in Afghanistan for us right now. So thank you, John. Oh, you made him? Okay, now he's got. Okay, so he's officially become a millennial. So go, John. There we go. But everyone's got a smartphone just about nowadays. You got some sort of screen that's happening. And so you think about it. Most of the life is in front of a screen there. But we talked about the worldview. We'll talk about that one a little bit more, that the worldview of Generation Z really is a post-Christian worldview. Only 4% of that generation would claim to have any type of biblical worldview, okay? And that's out of about 69 million children and teens in that generation. Identity makes up just Generation Z. We'll talk about that one. Security, diversity, that's a big one here in Generation Z. We'll talk about what helps form their world. And so let's talk about this one and just briefly talk about the world according to Generation Z. There's about five of these that I want to talk about. And did I get it up there correctly? There we go. Okay, and number one, they're screenagers. And again, we talked about that one last week and really went through just all the different stuff of social media. What is Generation Z on? And I was laughing with my wife on the way home. I said, I could see all across the audience, not just the Generation Z, it was all the millennials and Generation X that was like, oh yeah, that's me too. So Generation X is fast catching up to some of this, believe it or not. So, but okay, so let's talk about this. We talked about technology, and I just wanted to kind of wrap up this point here from last week about the area of technology. Because it is so prevalent in homes today, it is a part of life, okay? And so we really need to talk about this area, especially of what is happening in the parenting of Generation Z when it comes to technology. And I think this is kind of something helpful that might be a help. By the way, again, I am not speaking as an expert of this subject by any means, okay? I have a 2-year-old, and yes, he does have screens, and he does watch movies. But basically, I'm at the point where I'm just trying to keep him alive, okay? So that's my success as a parent right now. He hasn't killed himself yet, okay? So I understand I don't have teenagers and I don't have teens or younger kids who are going to have to be struggling with this right now. But it is coming, okay? And so some of this is going to be, this is some of you, it'll be helpful. As you're right in it, some of you, you're past that stage already. But maybe you've got grandkids or other kids that you're involved in their life, and this is a good area to kind of be thinking about, okay? Reports are showing a possible trend of the parenting of this next generation, okay? in some of the generation, especially with millennial generation, it was the generation where, for the first time, we saw a really big phenomenon that, you know, everybody's a winner, you know, that kind of idea, you know, you're not allowing anybody to fight their own battles, that kind of idea with that. And that's still kind of prevalent in this culture a little bit. Again, this is, we're broad brushing stuff a little bit, so I know that's not maybe how you were raised in some regards, but sometimes that is how it happened. And it just seems like there was a lot of overprotectiveness in different areas. But it's interesting that there's reports showing, as they do different studies, that there's still some of that shown of an overprotectiveness in some areas where they're not letting kids, you know, fight their own battles and deal with that. And it's always the parent coming to the rescue. It's interesting that there seems to be that side of it, but there's also an underprotectiveness in the area of technology. Okay? And a vast majority of parents, here's something I found interesting, a vast majority of parents do not know what their teens and kids are doing online. Nor would they ever think of invading that privacy. And folks, that's kind of scary. It really is. We as parents, especially parents, we need to be careful about what our children are doing online. Okay, we need to be aware and vigilant about what is being put before their eyes. You say, why is that? Folks, in a day and age of technology, we mentioned it, the rise of not just pornography on the internet, but the rise of unbiblical thinking and lifestyles that has been promoted through the forces of the internet is coming so much that, folks, can I just help you out? Your kids, as they grow up in a world of technology, are going to be exposed to something at some point. I had somebody ask me this just a couple weeks ago, and they said, hey, we'd like to get our son a smartphone, but what can we do to be absolutely protected from anything happening? And I said, nothing. They kind of looked at me in shock, like, what do you mean? I said, there's nothing that you can do absolutely to be 100% sure he'll never find something on that smartphone. You can't, but you can do some things to help. And so as parents, folks, we need to be understanding that we need to, a couple thoughts that I just had is, how do we work with our young people? How do we work with our children in the day of technology? Number one, I think we need to teach them how to use it maturely. Okay, and I think this is important. Now, your family may decide to say, okay, I'm just going to not use it. I know many families like that where they've said, you know what, we're not going to have Wi-Fi in our house and we're not going to have that. That's great. I don't know how they live, but that's great, you know? I kind of imagine like a little house on the prairie happening at that point, but I don't know if that's what's happening or not, but they've made it work, okay? But most folks are not going to do that. I'm going to have Wi-Fi in my house so I can do some stuff on the internet, okay? But I'm going to try to teach my children how to use devices responsibly. Okay, if we don't teach them how, and then all of a sudden just hand it to them when they become adults, why do we expect them to use it responsibly then? Okay, just a thought, okay? You can do this different ways, through filters, through accountability, okay? There are many great filters, and maybe at one point I'd like to do a little side shoot on some thoughts about social media. And maybe we can talk about filters and some things that I've found that have been really great for working with different folks. And also just having accountability, having that openness, that communication about, hey, what have you been doing online, okay? Even if nobody has fallen into something or seen something they shouldn't, having somebody else just to know that, you know what, if I did, the Bible says two are better than one. If there's two and one falls, the other is able to help them get back up. Okay, it's a biblical principle. So think about that. Also, don't give it to them until you know they're ready to control it, okay? I was doing a lot of work on the side for last year and the last couple of years of doing appliance repair. And so I was in a lot of different houses across the community. And it always surprised me how young kids have smartphones nowadays, how young they are. And I'll see like 7, 8, 9-year-olds having smartphones, and I'm kind of like, what are you doing with? Like, what do you need a smartphone for? And they're like, oh, I got all my friends, I got a text. And I'm like, I didn't even have that many friends when I was a kid. Like, where'd you get all those friends, number one, you know? And I don't know what they do, but they've got smartphones, okay? Well, not saying that your 8, 9, and 10-year-old may not be able to be super smart with that smartphone, but they may not be able to be super smart with that smartphone, okay? So you might want to think about that. Are they ready to control it? And if you say, yes, I want my kid to have that, then you better also make sure you've got some ways to help keep them accountable with it so that they don't unnecessarily, doesn't become a stumbling block for them in a really really a real issue later on in life. By the way, some of those issues that folks have found themselves in, especially in the area of pornography and things like that, it will come back to bite them later on. And it is a lifelong struggle, and it can hurt marriages. And so I really want to encourage you parents, work at it hard to really help your kids in this area of technology to use it well, to use it for God's glory, not just use it for selfish means, okay? We can use technology for God's glory, okay? I know there's many times we want to be done with technology, but we can still use it. And God, this is what our day and age is, so let's use it to reach people, okay? Also, another thought here is just side thought here. We also need to have open dialogue about anatomy, about sex, about biblical sexuality at a much earlier age than before, okay? Because of the rise of that, of philosophy, of exposure to pornography, of different things that you can find. You can find more on a smartphone in 5 minutes than most generations ever could in a whole lifetime. I'm serious. You really can. And so if kids have questions, guess what? What did we say last week was the answer to questions? Google. Remember, you know how they find out information? They Google it. Well, let me help you out. Google's not going to give them really great, they're going to give them answers, but it's not going to be great biblical ones. Or it may be a perverted view of that answer, okay? And so we really need to be having that conversation, honestly, folks and dads and moms at a much younger age than maybe it used to be in some generations. Just because of that, I was talking to a guy that I worked with for a little while, and he was telling me about he has a friend who is a superintendent of a school down in Nashville, and he's like, you know what? He's like that lady was telling him that, man, they were struggling so hard. It's a middle school, so fifth, sixth graders, and she said, man, you wouldn't believe the things that we're dealing with just trying to prevent these kids from doing all sorts of stuff in the bathrooms. I'm telling you, it's a lot younger age than you would even think because of the rise of the internet, okay? The information is out there, and we need to find a way to biblically direct them, okay? So we talked about that with the rise of their screenagers. Number two, the world according to Generation Z. This thought, diversity is normal. Okay, I got to go back and find my slide here because they're out of order. Okay, Generation Z, here's some thoughts because this is, you'll understand where we're going with this. Generation Z is one of the most ethnically diverse generations in American history. 48% of Generation Z is non-Caucasian. In 2016, the kindergarten class in the United States was the first year in which ethnic minorities made up the majority of the class. Okay. By the way, the fastest growing minority group in America is no longer the African American community. It is the Hispanic community, and it's just a big rise of what we would the minority ethnicities here in America as our country has with a lot of immigration and different stuff that has happened where it's going. Our culture also has a huge emphasis on being ethnically diverse. By the way, this is not a bad thing, okay? The church is a place for all for people of all nations, all ethnicities, all right? Again, we mentioned it last week, but some people say, you know, there's all these different races. No, there's not different races. There's one race, it's mankind, but there are a lot of different ethnicities, okay? And God has called us to reach all of them and to reach them well as best as possible. And so as we go there is a huge diversity, and we'll explain why that's kind of important in Generation Z here, okay? Generation Z has also seen the rise of women, or the woman in society and culture, okay? 56% of students on college campuses are women. And this is something that has been drastically different than the past as well, whereas back in the 70s, it was basically the reverse, okay? There will be about 2.2 million fewer men enrolled in colleges than women this year. And this trend is not showing any sign of abating anytime soon, okay? As we know, we all know what culture is doing, okay? Culture is pushing to have strong women in places of leadership. By the way, the feminist movement, in and of itself, when it began, I don't believe was necessarily wrong, okay? The feminist movement was birthed with the idea to some degree, to make women equal with men, which we know that God has created us equal, but man to lead and women to follow. Okay, that's how God placed it. It's not a popular philosophy to espouse, but it is how God created us. And not that one is less than the other, but that God said, hey, I want everything to work well, and so I'm going to say, man, you're going to lead. Yes, she is your equal, and you're to be working together, but she is to follow, okay? And but in feminism, what it did, what it was within the 1920s, was really the idea that, hey, that women would have the same rights and privileges as men in our country, which wasn't bad. That they would have the right to vote. They would have the right to own land if they wanted to. They'd have the right to drive cars. I'm all for it. Okay? Unless you want to live in Saudi Arabia, okay, I'm all for it. Okay? That's not bad. But it has reached a peak in an interesting side effects that I don't think anybody really saw coming, because now it's just kind of gone crazy. Okay? And one of the crazy things of it really is, I believe, the abortion movement. In that the right of a woman is elevated above the right of a newborn baby. Okay? And so that is one of the things that has happened in our culture. And by the way, the teaching of abortion has become the idea that it is just, it's just a mass of tissues. It's just a fetus. They have taken away calling it a baby. And it has come where this generation doesn't even, the thought of abortion being murder doesn't even pop up in their mind, actually. You say, is that really, Brother Matt, that can't be true. It is. I can't tell you how many times I've had teenagers ask me, you said that it's abortion, or abortion is murder, but why? Why would you say that? And you have to go back to ground zero to say, is it a life? Well, if it's a life, then someone's like, well, this is not an issue on abortion. But what I'm saying is it did give rise from the feminist movement, and this is the culture that the Generation Z is living in, as well as the idea of the Me Too movement. And I've mentioned that before. Again, the idea of any type of sexual assault or anything of that should never be allowed in culture, nor hidden. It should always be exposed. But the Me Too movement has gone off the rails in that it is no longer about those who have been actually sexually assaulted. It is, I believe, those who tend to come out are those who have claimed to be it in order to get something. And that's not sexual assault, okay? It has given rise to the belief that you don't have almost a choice to say no anymore. If you want to have a good position, if you want to get this, you want to get this movie title, you're going to have to do such and such. That's not sexual assault. That's getting what you want. That's a form of prostitution, okay? I'm just being blunt. But why you say, Brother Matt, why does that bother you so much with that Me Too movement? Because I don't want, if I have a daughter someday, I want her to know that she can say no, even if it costs her job. I'd rather her have her purity than success. Just saying. Number 12 here, the rise of the internet has exposed this generation to a plethora of new thoughts, of varying beliefs of religion, personal values, occupational dreams, the idea of you can't make a living playing video games anymore, folks. I'm just telling you, there are many guys out there making a living playing video games. So it has happened, okay? And it has risen a whole new plethora of occupational dreams. I don't know how they do it, but they do somehow, okay? Gender identity, sexual preferences. The internet has just blown it up. What was once something that you would have to go into the shadows of culture to find is now at the tap of a button. Generation Z is also, interestingly enough, is also likely to surround themselves with people who are different from them in belief or even lifestyle. Generation Z is used to things being different and people being different from what was once not culturally acceptable. And it has led to an inclusive culture where just about anything goes. We'll kind of hit on that a little bit more, but just kind of as a thought that it is Generation Z, they're used to things being different. They're used to things just being the way they are, okay? For some of you, some of you Generation X especially, you have seen a massive shift of culture since the 60s and 70s, okay? I'm young. I don't remember that. I see the side effects, but I don't remember that, okay? But you've seen, as Pastor mentioned it, you all have seen America one way as a culture, and now you see it radically different than how you grew up as a kid. It is a totally different way. But just remember, to Generation Z, this is the normal. It is. And so they're used to living this way. And they're used to knowing people who live this way. And so as we approach them, we have to remember that in some regards. We also are going to talk about in Generation Z, the world according to Generation Z, okay? Safe spaces are normal, okay? And we can all laugh about this, but I want to just kind of talk about this for a second. While we may laugh at the idea of safe spaces as a culture to some degree and maybe where it has gone, it is important to remember how they think so that we can reach them, okay? Generation Z, this is a millennial and generation kind of thing to some degree. They do not like to make people feel bad, okay? Which in and of itself is not a bad thing, okay? I don't like it. Maybe if you do, you know, we can talk about why you do. But, you know, it's not a bad thing not to try to necessarily offend people. You ever met somebody with a personality that they're just really brash? And they just, no, never. You need to get out more, Dad. Yeah. I've met a few in my life, and I know you're older than me, so. There's some people who are brash, and they just tend to, it doesn't matter what they're doing, who they're with. It's kind of like that bull in the china shop. Everything breaks, and they'll bully their way through any situation. Generation Z and millennial generation, for sure, does not like that type of personality, okay? There does seem to be a pervasive, a collective aversion to causing offense. I apologize, my spell checker didn't grab that one for me, so. It is a natural product of a pluralistic, inclusive culture that frowns on passing judgment, okay? And so the Generation Z doesn't like to make, as we'll see here in a second, they don't like to make dogmatic statements. And so especially as they're going through, if anything feels as if it might offend them or make them feel as if, oh man, now I'm angry or fearful that my beliefs have been called into question. It has risen this idea of what we would call to safe spaces. And this attitude has done a couple things. Number one, the idea of trigger warnings. You'll see these out in culture a lot, okay? They're written notices that content might provoke negative emotions, such as fear or anger, okay? It has risen if anyone has been wondering, what is this word named triggered? Okay, it has arisen a new meaning to that word. That's the idea to be aroused and to anger or fear by something. Okay, it is a new word in the vocabulary for some. You say, I have no idea, what does that mean? Okay, to be triggered is that. That's triggered. That's a great classic meme, okay? Anything that has happened, that is the very definition of triggered. Someone got really upset about something, so. This not has it only brought about trigger warnings, has also brought about the idea of safe spaces, okay? Designated areas where such content is banned either online or in a physical space, okay? And again, we laugh at this because we hear about it all the time in the colleges, don't we? You hear about it at college campuses, and they've got their designated safe spaces, and they've got their, labradoodles, you know, in the back where you can pet them and feel safe and comfortable, which I'm all for. You know, I like labradoodles, so hey. But, you know, you can drink some coffee, pet a labradoodle, I'm cool with that, okay? But we laugh at it a little bit. The original design wasn't necessarily a bad idea, okay? The idea was to help promote awareness of content that could be, you know, psychologically harmful for victims who had experienced trauma or even those who were suffering from mental illness, okay? The idea wasn't really necessarily a bad idea. But it, like everything, it went further than probably it was intended. And with the with some different philosophy, it went to new meaning here. And so now trigger warnings have expanded into classrooms and news outlets where letting anybody know of anything that could be offensive or even emotionally distressing, okay? And safe spaces have not just become areas to avoid information that could trigger those anger or strong emotions, but they've become a way to opt out of discussions that may in any way upset or provoke an individual, okay? You say, again, where are you going somewhere with this? I am. Alan, I can't even say his last name, Levanovich, that's the closest I'm going to get. He said this, there's a very real danger that these efforts to institute trigger warnings and safe spaces will become overzealous and render opposing opinions taboo. Instead of dialogues in which everyone is fairly represented, campus conversations about race, gender, and religion will devolve into monologues about the virtues of tolerance and diversity. Even though academic debate takes place in a community, it will also involve combat. Combat can hurt. It is literally offensive. Without offense, there is no antagonistic dialogue, no competitive marketplace, and no chance to change your mind. Let's see here if I can find this next one here. Protecting people from ideas they'd rather not hear is not only laughable, but also ultimately harmful to society. Religious liberty and freedom of speech are rights that can only be put to test at the distressing intersection of differing ideas. He says here, David Kinnaman says, if we run away from the crossroads, those freedoms are simply hypothetical. Say, Brother Matt, why are we talking about this? Because again, this is exactly how this next generation is thinking, okay? They are used to the idea of an opposing idea as being offensive to what they believe. In research the Barna Group did, one of the most chosen answers in a multiple choice question was some variation of I don't know or I'm not sure. And I have found myself doing this, even as a millennial, to where if I don't know the answer to it, but I'm not positive I don't, I'm going to say I don't know. Okay, I know that sounds really stupid, but that's how my brain works. Generation Z seems particularly reluctant to make declarative statements, okay? And about anything that could cause offense and thus struggle. They sometimes struggle with anxiety, indecision when it's time to give an answer, or even a time to act on it, okay? You say, okay, how is this helping us know how to reach our generation better? This thought here, reaching this generation especially, is going to require patience, gentleness, and love. By the way, that's how you reach most generations anyways. Love, speaking the truth in love, but especially a generation where they have been raised to think that any opposing thought process is offensive and I should run away from it. If we come in there like the bull in the china shop and try to beat them over the head with your Bible into the kingdom of God, you're going to lose them. By the way, if you try to disciple your children like that, parents, you're going to lose them too. Because that's not how they think. Okay? Gentleness and love. This generation will be automatically turned off to the truth of the gospel if we're not willing to preach it in love. We are to love the sinner and hate the sin. By the way, isn't that what Jesus did? That he loved the sinner so much, he loved you and me, that he was willing to die on the cross for us, but he never compromised on the sin. With the story of the adulterous lady that they brought before him, which was obviously a big trap that they had brought, they said, hey, we've found this lady, and she was in the very act of this adulterous relationship, and they brought her to him and said, what do you think we ought to do? And he's basically like, why did you bring her to me? I'm not the judge. I don't rule over in these matters. I'm just a carpenter. And he says, I'll tell you what, the person who doesn't have sin, you cast the first stone. And it says, from the oldest unto the youngest, they went away slowly. Isn't that interesting? The younger, more hot-headed ones were like, yeah, I guess I did, you know, I can't throw that stone. And then he looks at the woman, and Brother Matt's paraphrase version is this. He says, I do not condemn you either. But he said, go, and what did he say? Sin no more. He didn't try to sweep it under the rug that it wasn't sin. He spoke the truth, but you know what he did? He spoke it in love. I think he won that lady to believe in him as her personal savior. We are to love the sinner and love the sinner and hate the sin. And again, it does not mean that I cannot speak the truth. In a world that is running away from truth, we now more than ever need to stand up for truth. But we need to do it lovingly, okay? Lovingly, okay? As we go into here, Generation Z here. Number four, the worldview is post-Christian. And I probably didn't have to tell you that. But in this day and age, it isn't breaking news that Christianity in the United States is waning, is it? The Barna Study Group, which is an evangelical group over in California, has been reporting the rate of church attendance, religious affiliation, belief in God, prayer, Bible reading. They've been dropping for decades. But what is interesting is that the biblical worldview in each generation, as that has been dropping, is also getting smaller as well. The boomer generation with a 10% idea of a biblical foundation, really, that's what a biblical worldview is. They've grown up knowing the Word of God. They've grown up living their life in a way that would at least adhere to the principles of God's Word, okay? We get all the way down to Generation Z, where only 4% has been raised with any type of Bible knowledge. And therefore, the way that they viewed the world is not through the lens of the Bible. Okay, so when you see what is going out in culture, it really shouldn't surprise you. Because they're not looking at it the same way you are. You're looking at it through the lens of the Bible, hopefully. But they haven't, they don't even know what the Bible is yet. And so you say, wow, it is so far off. Yeah, it is, because they're not looking at it from that standpoint. The faith categories of the U.S., as it's interesting, as the Bible has been slowly taken out of culture, interesting trend here, again, is that the evangelical denomination, that would be a lot of different denominations of Christianity, okay? But also those that would be considered born again. We see that declining, but we also see a huge trend in this purple line of those who would claim to be atheist or agnostic or none. And this is important to think about too. Generation Z has continued to follow the trend of our country, having less and less interest in God. But there is one striking feature about this generation. The percentage of Generation Z that identifies as atheist is 2 times that of U.S. adults. So whereas at once, it used to be that people, even if they weren't born again or saved or anything like that, they would maybe just still claim to be Christian or something like that. It's becoming more and more popular just to say, number one, they don't even know what Christianity really is. And so it has risen with the idea of there is no God. Or I don't know God, I can't know Him, or I'm nothing, I don't believe in anything. And this generation truly is, we're seeing a post-Christian world. You go over into Europe, and the interesting thing about Europe is while the Catholic Church has a huge foothold over there, it is not the strongest religious presence. It's atheism, belief in no God. Why? Because they cast Him aside. And now it has risen where there is no God and secular mindset and everything like that. Many in Generation Z, more than any other generations before them, they're a spiritually blank slate. They are drawn to things spiritual, and they are, but their starting point is vastly different from other generations, many of whom received a basic education on the Bible and Christianity. The worldview of Generation Z, by contrast, is truly post-Christian. And they are not born into a Christian culture, and it shows. By the way, America, it is no longer a Christian culture. It can't be considered that anymore. How many, I'm just curious, how many were at a time in your life where you had either the Bible was allowed to be read or prayer was allowed in your school when you were growing up? You can remember that, okay? Okay, everyone else who doesn't remember that, let me see hands. Okay, for some, don't remember that. Hey, this generation, definitely, they have no concept of that. Where once even in the public schools, that they would allow prayer and Bible reading, that's not there anymore. Okay? And so now, we shouldn't be surprised when as a country and a culture, we have said we don't want God and we want a total separation of God and state. We want a total separation of God from our life, basically, is what they've also said. So it really shouldn't surprise us that this generation is coming on the scene and they really have no concept of God. They have no desire for God in some regards because they've been raised without any of that from their parents. And their parents are the same way. There's been at least 2, maybe 3 generations that have grown up in a day and age where Christianity is not even popular anymore, if I can put it that way. So how does that help us reach this generation as we're kind of finishing up some of this here? While a majority, 58%, still identifies as Christian, only 43% regularly attend church. And we have seen that across America, the decline of church attendance even, of just where those who are just casual attenders, they just stop coming. 1 in 11, 9%, is what we would maybe consider engaged Christians, someone with beliefs and practices that put faith at the center of their life, okay? That's not a very big number when you think about that. By the way, one of the things of the Great Commission is not just to, again, we mentioned last week, it's not just to get people saved. What is the greatest part of that commission? Go and make disciples. So we want people into that engaged Christian. We want them to be saved, but then also with their whole life following God. Well, 9%, in that generation, only about 9% really is there. We have a long way to go with this generation. And like I mentioned, the rise of atheist or none in this generation is showing a trend toward the nominal Christian becoming less popular. Whereas once, and this is just kind of interesting side fact, and I think what we will probably see in the future even more so. Down south, it's a little bit harder because everyone down here is a Christian, right? You talk to them, and everyone around here, I've grown up in lots of different parts of the country, but especially here, everybody is a Christian, and they're probably a Baptist of some sort, okay? You know, they're all of some sort of variation of that. But in some parts of the country, you're seeing it even more, where it used to be where you'd have those that you would consider born again, and then you'd have the unbelievers, those who would claim nothing. And then you'd have those that you're pretty sure they're not saved, or they're in a different denomination, that they're like, okay, they're not hearing the gospel, but they would still call themselves Christian. Okay, you tracking with me? It is becoming, and I think it will become very much clearer as we continue on in the path this culture is going. I think the divide between believer and unbeliever is going to become very much clearer because it is becoming less popular to call yourself a Christian. So one of two things is going to happen. Those who would maybe consider calling themselves Christians aren't going to even go there. And those who are nominal Christians who aren't really saved and really wanting to serve God anyways, those people are not going to stay. And so they're going to fall into the unbeliever category. And so that distinction is going to be very much more evident. And I think, again, that it already is coming there. This culture, again, we've seen this. And this is just a continuation of our American culture. We live in a very great country where we can have financial success, financial security. We really do. With that does come the continual rise of a hedonistic and materialistic society. Especially after we have gotten rid of God, we have come to the point where everything is about entertainment or everything is about pleasure. And that really is this culture. It's about the next great thing. I was talking to Brother Dennis. He mentioned this, where he had a pastor that was talking about basically the next big thing. And that's basically where our culture is. They got to find something greater, and they got to do this greater. And that's the rise of this culture for sure. Generation Z, 53% say that happiness is the goal of life. Well, that can be found in their eyes in a lot of different ways, can it? And then you start looking at what are their goals for life, and this tells you where they're at. Their goals for life, 43% say, my goal for life by the time I'm 30 is to be successful. Only 23% would say to finish my education. Only 20% would say to have a family, to be healthy. I guess that shows us where our generation is. 6% wants to be healthy. Everyone else is eating the Big Mac. So spiritual, do you have any spiritual desire? Only 8 would say, I really have any goals to be spiritually mature, you know, in that way. One of the, as we continue going here, this generation has shown an aversion to growing up in adulting. Okay, that's a brand new word for some of you as well. It's a word we coined because adulting is hard, right, guys? Okay, their idea of what it means to become an adult has also changed. And the millennial generation, one of their thoughts was, well, as soon as I feel like I'm emotionally or mature enough, that's when I'm an adult. The Generation Z has kind of a different idea of that. It is when I am financially independent that I finally am able to become an adult. Well, for some folks, that's going to take all your life. So you're going to be a kid for a long time, folks. I don't know if you knew that or not, but here's some interesting thoughts. And this is just kind of some thoughts here as you're understanding this, their mindset, their worldview. It really does put a lot of things in perspective for us. As you're looking at some of the things, what did they want to accomplish by age 30? This was a survey put out that they answered. And number one, they said rank number one was finish my education. I wanted to finish by the time I'm 30. I want to have all my education done. Number two was maybe start a career. Number three was become financially independent. Number four for Generation Z was follow my dreams. I love that one, don't you? Follow my heart. Got to follow my dreams. Which you need to have dreams. We need to encourage our kids to have goals, okay? If we don't shoot them for anything and they don't shoot towards anything, you'll never hit it, okay? But I'm pretty sure that's not exactly what they're referring to. Number five, this one kind of cracked me up. Enjoy life before you have the responsibilities of being an adult. I like that one, don't you? That one right there. That's the result of an entertainment culture, okay? That I've got to enjoy life And then they figure out that once they you know become an adult, it's no fun. Okay, that's how they view life. And they get down here. Interesting enough, they get all the way down here. On number 8 was get married. Become a parent is way down there. You know. By the way, those two things that'll make an adult out of you pretty quick, especially having kids. So, because then you're like, wow, I can't. I've got to look out for someone other than myself. Okay, and there is a general trend in the last. Two generations that folks are getting married later on in life and different things. So sometimes it feels like maybe their adulting is starting out later. Well, it's just the general trend, which is also going to give rise to the fact that there's going to be a whole lot more in this generation that probably will be in that college age and career group kind of mentality for a long time, okay? Maybe longer than other generations. And so that's a great opportunity for us to try to reach out to them in that way. This evidence simply, as we kind of, we got a couple more slides here for this one. This evidence simply is a continual growing apathy of organized religion and a cultural decline from biblical moorings. And again, this is where we're going to have to come in, as we'll talk about, and we're going to have to start from the very basic foundations to reach people. Here's something I want to mention here. The millennials and Generation Z are said to have grown up in a time when they have never known peace. Okay, and this is something that a lot of different secular writers are writing and different stuff. But think about it, at least for the millennial generation, and then Generation Z has come on the stage where it's kind of hard for me to believe, but a big event in my generation's life was September 11th, okay? That is one of the big things that we look to as, wow, that was pretty much life-shattering, where we had known relative peace in America for a while, even though there was other things happening. We had known peace primarily for the most part. That was the first big thing I remember, okay? And then the subsequent war on terror and stuff like that. Generation Z, most of them don't even remember September 11th, except for in history books anymore. So it makes me feel old now, okay? So some of you are like, you don't remember internet. Well, I don't. They don't remember some of the things I grew up with now, okay? And then you have the recession of 2008, where many of that generation, they watched their parents go through times where they really struggled financially or maybe lost their house. And they went through a big time like that. It was just a big upheaval in their life. And then we also have the issues where we're dealing with as a country nowadays with the issue of mass shootings. And different things like that seem to be going on across the country. And so there is a lot of insecurity in this generation. I do also put it into perspective that if we really think about it, these two generations, millennials and Generation Z, while these are bad and it does bring some insecurity, we don't really generally know what real poverty or real suffering really feels like. If we put it in perspective, okay? Again, because we are sometimes this generation can be a little bit more, we're so trapped into what's going on in our life, we don't always look back to history. And you think about the early 1900s and the First World War, and then you had the Great Depression, and then the Second World War, and then with my grandpa, in his generation was Korean War, Vietnam War. And then we had the 60s and 70s and 80s, and then it was kind of relative, a little peace, and then we had this huge issues with the war on terror and stuff like that. But really, our generation doesn't understand what true suffering is, but at the same time, this is the world they live in. So you could look at them and say, oh, well, you don't really understand, but that's all they know, okay? And so as we reach them, I want to close out with this thought. What does this mean for us here tonight with just this last thing? We do have another. Next week, we're going to talk about the worldview of that relativism is the king of their culture and how that applies to life. And then we're going to really wrap it up with some thoughts about how can we really biblically talk about this. But how does this mean for us when we go through the gospel, knowing that this culture is not having a biblical perspective anymore? How do we do that? We have to go slower. And probably more thorough in the presentation of the gospel. You say, what do you mean by that? The foundational truths may have to be laid first rather than just a simple gospel presentation. Say, what do you mean? I mean this. I think there's going to be very, and it already is here, and I believe this very firmly. There are kids who don't even understand who Jesus is. So I can tell them all I want, oh, Jesus will take away your sins. That's great. You just have to depend on Jesus. Okay, great. Who's Jesus? They don't even understand the foundation of Genesis. And so if we're going to reach them, we've got to really build back that foundation, that whereas once you could go and tell someone the gospel and they knew most of the biblical truth, because most denominations for a while until about the 60s and 50s and 60s, most of those denominations for the most part they at least had some sort of gospel in them, and they could figure it out. They don't have that anymore, folks. It's a blank slate, which is good. It can also be bad, but it can be good, okay? But we do have to take time. And then we also just are talking about that there is a huge number of Generation Z Christians that are leaving the church. And it's just that idea that the entertainment philosophy that the American church has adopted in many ways, it isn't keeping them. And it isn't showing real impact on their lives. They're just seeing that, my friends can have a better rock concert than that, you know, or something like that. And the case in point is that they're not seeing Jesus change their life practically. And that is what this next generation wants to see. They want to see, they live in a world of, in their eyes, that is insecure. Where that's why they want to have financial success. They saw their parents struggle so much. They want to have it now. And they are living in a world of uncertainty. And folks, Jesus is the answer in a world of uncertainty, isn't he? And it doesn't matter what is going on. We have the answer. And we have to be committed to understanding them so that we can reach them. And so as we go through, we'll talk some more about next week on the idea of some of the other big issues of our day and where that has come from. We'll wrap up there next week. Pastor? All right, let's go ahead and pray here tonight.